All right, welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. This is episode number 81, and joining me once again in this series on projecting NFL offenses for the 29th season is Dwayne McFarlane of the RSP, Fighting Chance Fantasy Football, and of course, Football Guys. Hey, Dwayne, welcome back.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having me on. It's another great day to talk football.
It absolutely is, and it's a great week because, you know, if you're an RSP reader then and you haven't seen it yet, you really need to check out Dwayne's piece on how to project players. And it doesn't matter whether you are planning on doing projections yourself as a fantasy player or whether you just want to learn more about the game. If you're someone who's listening in because you're just a super fan who wants to be enriched by the, you know, you kind of have more enriching knowledge of the game, then I couldn't recommend anything more than reading Dwayne's article, because when we're talking about, you know, how things work, how coaches look at the game, what type of program they have in terms of how they're going to give the ball to players, how they're going to game plan around them, when do they use players? Projection models are the best way, and I think they are one of the most valuable and most underutilized tools for analysis, period, in football. And that means for beat writers, it means for fantasy players, it also means for anyone doing any kind of analysis of the game, even within teams. I'm sure teams are doing their own forms of that, but it gives you an understanding of how to really ground yourself in the realities of the game so that you don't over or underreact to what coaches, players, and personnel executives are going to share with the public. I think it gives you a better understanding of the machinations of the game, and it will give you an understanding of how to look at the game with a greater sense of nuance. And you know, Dwayne is a very successful high-stakes fantasy player, and one of the reasons that he's aboard the RSP site and doing writing is that he has a great blend of knowledge of the analytical side of the game, but also about watching the game and incorporating, you know, observational understanding of, you know, the machinations of the game into his analysis. He's not one of those people that says, you know, I don't need to watch any football to understand the game. I can just, the numbers will tell me that. That's, you know, that may be attention getting, but it's, you know, Dwayne's open enough to look at both and draw tendencies, you know, draw information from both. And that really maximizes the strength of what he does. So I would highly recommend going to How to Project NFL Offenses, written by Dwayne McFarlane at the RSP site. And Dwayne, I mean, just before we even get started looking at the Chargers and the Raiders in terms of our you know, analysis and projecting of their work, I mean, I'd love for you to share with folks a little bit about what you're showing them or how you got, you know, why you find projections so valuable and what your path was to doing this. Anything that you would like to share that you feel like people should know about, you know, projections as well as this art?
Sure, yeah. You know, for me, my love first was always football. And then this thing called fantasy football came along, you know, and it was like a natural, it was like a natural fit, right? It's like the old Reese's commercial where the guy's got the chocolate walking around the corner and the girl's got the peanut butter. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're running into each other. And one of them says, hey, you got chocolate in my peanut butter. And the other one says, no, you got peanut butter on my chocolate, or whatever they say. But it's like this match, right? So right. It's so interesting, though. My love started just by loving football. But once I got into fantasy is really what triggered me wanting to get into projections. And what's funny is, you know, early on, and people can read this in the article, I lay my journey out around projections. You know, I wasn't good at it, you know, and I just, and here's why, is I wasn't taking a full understanding, you know, of the context of a player. I was starting with the player instead of the context of the player. So what I mean by that is, instead of just saying Julio Jones is an awesome player, so I'm just going to make him a top three receiver. Now that can work, right?
Right.
But it's now saying, okay, Julio Jones, in the context of a Kyle Shanahan offense, or, you know, if we're, you know, take it a step further, now a Dirk Cotter offense, with the type of quarterback he has and bringing, you know, all of those things together and bringing that data together. And where I really made my big breakthrough is honestly when I started looking at players in the context of the team. That was my first big breakthrough, you know, many years ago with projecting players. And then, you know, my next breakthrough was taking that just to one more level. And it's what I was just mentioning, the understanding the coaching, which is a huge part of what we talk about on this show. Honestly, a big part of the information that I'm sharing with the audience whenever we talk about this show is something that I built about 7 years ago now. But I built out my first coaching database, which then allowed me to go look at a coach in context of roster construction and the type of players they've had on the team, whether the quarterback was good, were they winning, were they losing, how did they distribute the ball? And you're just able to get a really good feel for coaching tendencies. And then that in turn helps you turn around and think about it. For me, what I love about it, you know, Matt, is when this became the most enjoyable to me was when I escaped, and it's really hard, but when I truly escaped last year equals this year, when I start my projections, I do not even look at what a player did last year. Awesome. I don't care if he had 180 targets. I don't care if he had however many. Now it's baked into the way I do it because I'm looking at percentages. Yeah. I'm looking at how many plays does this coach typically run? Does it change when he's trailing versus leading? These are things that I don't want this to sound, but I'll just make it a brag. These are things that you're now hearing about in the industry that I've been doing, you know, for 5, 6, 7 years. And it's helped me, like you said, it's helped me from a standpoint to monetize. Basically, the way I've monetized it to this point has been through winning and big fantasy, you know, season-long events. But when that breakthrough came, it was just huge. Now, I will go back and check my stuff against last year, but it's more about what's the offense going to be this year, right? You know, and I just love that. Now, of course, I'm still going to project Julio Jones as the number one receiver on Atlanta. So to some extent, you know, you're still looking at a depth chart and you're saying, okay, here's the coach. Here's what he's done historically. Most coaches still lean to using their best players the most. Now, not all of them. Some don't. Some actually have a very strong tendency that they want to run their scheme. And if you don't fit in it, that's a problem. There are certain ones that do that. There are others that don't. They're very adaptable. And typically, you know, they're going to figure out a way to get the best three players the ball. But anyway, it's about all of those things coming together. And in the article, you know, just real quick, what folks can expect if they go check it out, you know, I lay out, you know, three ground rules for projecting NFL offenses so they can, it's around some of the things I just said. You've got to utilize a top-down approach. Then you've got to go team by team, and you have to have established checks and balances. You know about those, Matt. And then you talk about process. You're like, you've got some of the, you know, most detailed and fine-tuned processes in the world when it comes to scouting. I do a similar thing, right, with the projection process. And it's really, you know, there are 6 key steps that I lay out for, you know, the reader. And so they can go and find that, you know, on your website today. And if it's something they're interested in doing, it's going to help them get better at projections. And even if you're not interested in doing your own projections, because it's time consuming. Once you read it, you know, if you haven't done them, it could almost seem daunting,
right?
You know, like, wow, I got to do all this.
Right.
And I try to keep it simple. And remember, this has been an iterative process for me over the years. I didn't start off doing all this.
Yeah. You didn't just spit it all out of your fingers on it, you know, in a keyboard, and Jack Kerouac. I wrote a novel out of a roll of toilet paper and like benzene fueled rage of, you know, of typing for 3 days straight and then passed out, you know.
Right. The beauty of it, though, even if you don't want to do your own projections, I think what it gives you more a better understanding of how they should be done. And so if you're leaning on someone else's projections, whether they be something you're getting from me or any other industry expert, and there are a lot of quote unquote industry experts, you know, these days, this is kind of a filter almost that you can run through. What are you getting?
Yes.
You know, and it's a way for you to have a conversation with the people doing those projections so you can understand how much weight do you put into them, right? You know, if you're smart, you're not just looking at one person's projections, but if you look at 20, it can almost become paralyzing because then how's it going to be actionable? What I like to do, I don't just look at mine. I do mine first, but then there are other people I respect in the industry that I still want to see where they stand on players. And guess what? The ones I respect are the ones that I know have a good process in place.
There you go. And no, and it's great. And, you know, for I'll brag on Dwayne a little bit, is that, you know, Dwayne has captured 3 top 5 finishes in large field fantasy tournaments, you know, with at least, say, like 8,000 entrants over the past 5 years, 3 top 5 right. finishes. So, you know, that's someone who's putting his projections to use in a really positive way. And say you're not someone who's really into doing projections, but you'd like to be able to get, you know, more of Dwayne's expertise. One of the things that's nice is that, you know, in addition to, I know that he's available to answer questions, and certainly if you're interested in doing projections, he's going to be a great source for you, but he's also going to provide some of his projection expertise to individual situations, individual teams, in the forthcoming RSP newsletter, which will be available in late July. And he'll be touching base, doing some of this work between July and December this year. And these are going to be projections that are exclusive to subscribers of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio publication. So you can get the RSP at mattwaldman.com and know that with the monthly newsletter, you're going to get some stuff from Dwayne that you won't see anywhere else. And of course, Dwayne also is doing some great work over at Football Guys, and his projection spectrum is a really nice look. Is also going to be looking at players that are going to be exclusive to Football Guys, that you'll find, you know, a way of learning about not only the process, but some of the things that Dwayne looks at that is kind of that invisible thread between process points, because that's really one of the most important things about why we're having these discussions about projections, or when we talk about players on podcasts or doing video work with them, is that you can show someone a process. And it's a valuable starting point. I mean, like Dwayne, you know, Dwayne will probably save you 5 years of work with what he shared with you in his How to Project NFL Offenses. But even so, if you're really committed to doing this, you're going to understand pretty quickly that there's also another 15 to 20 years of actually looking at, you know, dealing with situations and making judgment calls and understanding how to solve problems that are drawn from a variety of resources and experiences. And that goes for scouting. It goes for projecting data. And, you know, and that's what makes Dwayne really valuable in this context, is he's not only going to be able to teach and show you the answers, but he's also going to be able to provide, you know, some context to certain different problematic things that he may not be able to lay out as a lesson plan for people to absorb. But you'll get that through a lot of the work that he's doing that's ongoing. So, yeah, I mean, couldn't recommend it enough. And we'll get on to talking about the Chargers and the Raiders and apply some of this stuff. So, you know, to begin with, I mean, let's go with the Chargers. Melvin Gordon came out recently and was like, you know, I think I'm going to hold out. I'd like to get paid on the level of Ezekiel Elliott and Le'Veon Bell and Todd Gurley. I think I'm worth that kind of thing. And he's kind of making threats there. Phillip Rivers, you know, here he is. He kind of, I've joked on a podcast with Matt Caraccio and Jay Moyer that will be out soon, that Phillip Rivers is kind of like the very savvy short order cook working a booming hours of a small diner that's packed and probably mixed between churchgoers and drunk people from Saturday night, and has to like make sure that he can keep everybody happy and keep everything moving and the plates moving and the, you know, and the cash register rolling with what he does. And certainly he has the staff to do it, you know, with guys like Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, who's an up and comer. And there's some interesting receivers, young receivers and older ones who are capable. It'll be interesting to see what happens there, but it also depends a lot on Hunter Henry. Can he be as, I believe it was maybe Chad Parsons or I'm trying to think of who, or Phil Alexander at Football Guys asking the question, is Hunter Henry the next great tight end? Is he the next Zach Ertz, Travis Kelce type of player to be a dominant statistical force? And so we roll all that up, and that's kind of the Chargers landscape. I mean, what are some things that come to mind for you when we start digging into the specifics of the Chargers that caught your eye?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing is this is one of the best rosters, all around rosters in football. And I don't think the Chargers get enough credit for that. And they are actually one of the few teams that don't even have an analytics department. So it's kind of a case point. You know, I love data and I love analytics, but this is a team that I think is truly, you know, they've built their team based on, you know, their scouting, and they obviously feel really good about their scouts, and they've made some great additions to their team, and they're a very balanced team. But when you think about it, I'll pose this question to you, Matt. You know, as an overall roster, now quarterback is obviously weighted, and Patrick Mahomes is arguably, you know, he's the best in the league. If he's not, right, he's on path to be the best for several years to come. But if I were to just say, okay, quarterback's one position, and yes, it's very important, but you have to choose between the whole roster of the Chargers versus the Chiefs, which would you pick?
Right. And I would choose the whole roster of the Chargers, to be honest with you.
yeah, me too.
Yeah. I mean, and I hate to say that, as much of a Patrick Mahomes believer and fan I am, but you know, ultimately you hope that you can get a good enough quarterback to come in there. And if that whole roster includes Philip Rivers, then it's really not that tough of a choice. You know, if you were to say to me the entire roster, but you don't have Philip Rivers versus Patrick Mahomes, and like you get one or the other, that would be a tougher choice, but I'd still probably pick the whole right. roster. But add Rivers into that mix, it's a no-brainer. You take this.
Right. Now, the way this works out is in any one given game, right? That great quarterback can beat any defense. And that's where, you know, Mahomes gives the Chiefs an edge. But if we set the two quarterbacks aside, man, I like the runners better with the Chargers. I think the offensive line might be tied at this point. The Chiefs probably still have a slight edge, but they lost some players this offseason. Whereas the Chargers have some younger guys like Forrest Lamp, et cetera, that are still, you know, they're still coming into their own. And if I look at, okay, who do I have at tight end? Yeah, I'm going to take Kelce, but I still like Hunter Henry. I like Tyreek Hill. I love Tyreek Hill as a player, but we don't know what's going to happen for sure with Tyreek Hill. Keenan Allen is, you know, a top 10 receiver in the league in my mind. When you think about his separation and his route running ability, basically he's open every play, no matter the coverage. He's that good. You know, he's a top five route runner separator in the league. And then I get, you know, a guy, you know, Mike Williams, I'm not crazy about, but he's a nice secondary or tertiary target, right? When you think about Hunter Henry, you know, being first, then you add Melvin Gordon, if they get him signed, which I think they'll get something worked out. And then they have complementary backs to him. You've got Austin Eckler, who is a great change of pace back. You know, he runs routes downfield, very similar to the piece that, you know, Jarrett and I talked about, you know, on the RSP, or actually we wrote for the RSP 2 or 3 weeks ago around the Saints and around, you know, what the Patriots do. This is the other team that really uses the running backs well. And what I see with this team, taking a step back, the biggest thing is, if you're thinking about them as an offense, wow, they can beat you in a multitude of ways.
Yeah.
And they also have stocked up on defense. Look what they did on defense this year. So I just feel like it's a team that can beat you in so many different phases. I really, really, really love what they've done, you know, with their roster. Now, when you think about projecting them, you know, all of those things, that's context, right? All of those things are going to, you know, come into play. And if you think about, you know, from a coaching standpoint, if we just start, you know, with what Anthony Lynn, you know, has done, he's almost more like a Andy Reid type of offensive guy. When you think about the way he balances things out, he doesn't run a huge volume of plays. He relies more on efficiency. It's not that the plays are low. The plays are middle of the pack when you rank, you know, his tempo versus the rest of the NFL, but very efficient. And then that comes down to who you just talked about a minute ago, which is Philip Rivers. And Philip Rivers, honestly, he's just one of these guys, Matt, that, you know, he's there every year. And I think people just kind of forget about him.
Right.
But if you look at what he's done, you know, last year, he completed 68.3% of his passes. That's the second most in his career. His completion percent rating on Next Gen Stats, which is really they're doing some cool things at Next Gen. This is one of the ones I like. I don't know how predictive it is at this point because we don't have enough data yet. It's only been there 3 years. But last year, in the way they were running that offense, he came to a new level. I mean, he was a plus 2%, right, on his completion percentage versus other quarterbacks that threw into similar windows because they've got the separation data. It's at similar areas of the field. Mm. So his completion rate was at an all-time high except for one other year. And his yards per attempt last year, Matt, 8.48. That's the highest since 2010. So despite probably having some deteriorating issues with his arm going on, and I think we've all seen that, I think the thing with Philip Rivers is he was a guy that never truly depended on his arm strength. And I think that served him well late in his career. It's about anticipation. It's about understanding the play before the pre-snap, but then being able to, like that short order cook you talked about earlier, he can make a quick post-snap adjustment. Now, in the past, he has had a year or two that'll pop up on you and he'll throw some picks because he does trust that so much. And then I think when you pair, if he is wrong and that arm strength isn't quite as good, it can equal a pick, you know, and so sometimes that will pop up as a problem. But overall, I mean, his interceptions per attempt are, you know, well below the league averages, except for one or two years of his career. So I think when I look at Philip Rivers, he's just now, you know, really getting in sync with the way this offense runs and with all of the new weapons he has, which for me is a good thing, you know, for their overall offense. And so whenever I looked at, you know, just real quick looking at the team and what I projected the team at, you know, I just, you know, shared where I've got Anthony Lynn. So I've got them at 950 attempts. I've got them at 57% pass. So that's 542 passes and 409 rushes. Now, Pro Football Focus actually grades their offensive line as the 29th in the league. I actually disagree with that. When if I were taking a look at it from last year only and not taking into account some of the maturation of these other players, I think they're going to be more like middle of the pack this year with their offensive line. So, and if that does happen, that helps Rivers even more, because right now Rivers basically, he just overcomes that on his own. Yeah. I mean, the guy gets a lot of pressure and he still delivers. You know, I mean, one of the things with Rivers, like if you go look at him, and this is something I like to do with every quarterback. So you talked about some of the other things that, you know, between the lines. And I talk about this a little bit in the piece, but for quarterbacks, there's a few things I want to go look at. One, I want to go look at their deep passing. Do they have the ability to challenge the field vertically? Because you really need that. If you don't have that, you're kind of limited, and the better defenses will take what you do away. Right. But if you can always have the threat of being able to push things vertically, you're in good shape. And Philip Rivers, every year of his career, except for one, Matt, has been well above the league average on his completion percent on passes over 20 yards. So that's always good to see. But he doesn't depend on it overly. His yardage is always right around the league average or just above as a percentage of his total yards. So that shows you a well-balanced quarterback. The other thing that I like to look at is, you know, a quarterback that's under pressure. And Philip Rivers is under pressure a lot. If you look at this, and I think this is where you start to see the trend with the line, he was under pressure 40%, then 40%, then 37%, and then last year down to 35% over the last 4 years. The thing about Rivers is he will not take sacks. He's going to let the ball go. In those situations, that is where the interceptions can jump up and grab him. You know, they bite him a little bit. But overall, if you look at, you know, his NFL rating versus pressure, it's above average. It's not elite. It's not like Tom Brady. I think that's where he differentiates into a tier just below guys like Brady and what Peyton Manning was and those guys, because of their ability to handle pressure was just a little better. Now, to be fair, Philip Rivers has had to deal with way more pressure than either one of those guys have through their career. But when you look at what he does, you know, on play action, you know, last year he added 3 yards per attempt, Matt, on passes with play action without. I mean, this is just a guy that understands, you know, how to utilize all the different tools in the tool belt. And so when I look across all these different areas for Philip Rivers, whether it be him throwing the ball quickly or getting the ball out late, you know, he grades out at least above average in every single category. And so when I look at historically, when I look at quarterbacks that have consistently done all of those things, they're just really hard to defend. They're really hard to hold down. And guess what? You typically don't see, you don't ever see them have a terrible season. Whereas other guys like Andy Dalton, just to kind of give the audience an example, and I'm probably going a little long on this topic, but since we just talked about projections, I wanted to kind of give a little insight. So on a guy like Andy Dalton, what you'll notice is in several of those categories, he'll grade out similar to Rivers. But when he's under pressure, he's worse.
Yep.
And when he's asked to make big plays that are off script, so asked to hold on to the ball longer, he's worse. And he's also not elite when kept out of pressure. He's only good. And so if you look at Andy Dalton's history, he needs the scheme to complement him. He needs to be with the right coach, with the right players around him. And if you do, you can be successful with Andy Dalton. Phillip Rivers is one of the guys, maybe not at the elite level, but at least at a good or great level, he can overcome any situation. And he can pretty much hold things together just on his own. Now you give him the cast he has around him today. I mean, this might be the best cast he's ever had. Now, back early in his career, before he was getting to pass so much, he did have Vincent Jackson and not Malcolm Floyd. Was it Malcolm Floyd?
Yeah.
Not Michael. Michael would be the wrong one. Yeah, Malcolm Floyd back in the day. He had Darren Sproles, you know, shooting around out of the backfield back in the days. He had LT, who was a great receiver out of the backfield. So
Gates.
Back in those days, I would argue, yeah. Oh, how am I forgetting Gates? That should have been number one. Antonio Gates. Matt's like, hit me on the head with a bat. But since then, right, that all deteriorated, right? We went through Ryan Matthews, and not that Ryan Matthews was, you know, terrible or anything, but they just never had the supporting cast again. That's just finally been rebuilt.
Yeah.
And so for me, I'm excited about Rivers. You know, people in fantasy probably won't be as excited about him. And it really comes down because so many quarterbacks run now, right? And that just gives them an edge over Rivers. But if you want to look at, you know, you're thinking about this Chargers offense, I have them being, you know, very effective based on everything about Rivers and then looking at, you know, the players around them. So right now, if you want, we can kind of bounce back and forth, Matt. I don't know what you have here, but I've got 542 attempts, which I talked about. I've got him at 65%. Completion percentage. Like I said, last year he was at a 68. The year before he was at a 63. But if you look at the way they adjusted the offense a little bit last year, a little bit lower depth of target, not super low, but that's kind of, that gives him the potential to be at a 67% completion percentage again this year at a medium. At the median, I gave him 65%, but I gave him 8 yards per attempt. And that's one of the areas where Rivers over the last, you know, couple of years, you've seen him continually increasing. And I think that has a lot to do with the talent around him. And so if you look at his touchdowns per attempt, I've got him at 5.5%, which is very healthy. But I'm telling you, would it surprise me if one of these seasons, you know, this year or next, with these weapons, if they're healthy, all of a sudden he has a year where it's 7.5? It wouldn't. Just wouldn't surprise me because the weapons are strong, right? But 5.5% still puts you at 30 touchdown passes. And then I've got him at 12 picks. I don't know that we even need to discuss rushing yards. I put it at zero. And I gave him zero rushing touchdowns. So from a fantasy perspective, you know, that's going to be, you know, for a lot of folks, depending on their scoring, you know, if you get fantasy owners listening, you know, that's going to put him down in like that second tier after your first 12 quarterbacks. But man, he's a player that I have no problem waiting and just taking him and saying, you know what I'm going to get every week. And there's probably more upside than people think.
Yeah, me too, because I know that means I can just pick better players on the front end who that I can stock up at all the other positions and know that Rivers isn't going to be that far behind that first tier and is often going to have first tier weeks that is even going to put me over the top more because of the fact that quarterbacks I wouldn't say quarterbacks don't matter, but, you know, there's a lot of there's certainly a not a sharp drop off once you get to a certain tier level in terms of production. And when you have a guy like Rivers who's capable of high points but still maintaining it in the road in terms of giving you that solid numbers, I agree with you, he's a target that I always take a look at after, you know, somewhere between the 9th and 13th round, depending on what league I'm in and who I'm working with. But, you know, you brought up a lot of salient points about Rivers and some of them that I really enjoyed hearing about just as someone who studies his tape a lot, is that he is extremely good under pressure. He may not statistically be elite, like you said, but when you watch that he gets so much of it and is a difficult form of pressure, he's like, if we continue with the short order cook analogy, basically he's a four-star, he's putting out four-star food in a diner where the hostess sucks and can't see people in the right way. And half the wait staff is like walking out and quitting at any point during a shift. And he's still somehow being able to pump out food and get things organized and keep things in way that he's putting out four-star food. And if he actually had if he actually had the facilities and the surrounding talent, he might be a Michelin star chef. I mean, you know,
hey, let me ask you one thing, because something I noted, and I actually had it in my notes here, you know, when I watch Rivers in those few years where the interception thing has been a blip, you know, I do believe some of it can be because he's such an anticipation guy and his arm strength isn't quite what some of the other guys are. So yeah. I do think that gives the DB a smidge more to react. But one thing that I had noted on a lot of these, he's such an anticipation guy. I think if his receiver's not on the same page, and I would guess most of the time he's right about the read.
Yeah.
There's several picks that I've seen where literally it just looks like the receiver, and I can't know for sure because I don't know the play design or what that receiver was supposed to read based on the way the cornerback was shaded. We don't always know those things. We can make some assumptions, but there were several times where I definitely jotted down, that looked like that was probably on the receiver, not on Philip Rivers. Of course, looking at him and he's screaming at the dude the whole way off the field, you know, obviously he believes he's right, but I would just love to, what your thoughts are on that, if that's something you've noticed.
It's a mix of two things, really, because there were a lot of years where it was he would take the risk and hope that his receiver's on the same page and the receiver wasn't. And he would, but he's always been very good at also saying that was on me. Like you often even see him do that too, where he's making a fourth quarter late game throw and it's an interception and he's like, that was on me. Like, and you can tell that sometimes there are throws like that, but for the most part, yes, because you're an anticipation thrower and he makes a lot of amazing anticipation throws while being hit. He's what, you know, people don't realize about him or don't think about is he may not be fast at all. I mean, he may not be slow. He's more like tortoise, you know, but like he can move. He's like very mobile and he's someone that is extremely strong. Like watch the number of throws that he completes where someone is hanging off of him or he's able to pull away from a defender hanging off of him and make the throw. And you realize how impressive he truly is being able to stand in that pocket and just shake people to get second chance opportunities. I mean, he's every bit on the level of Ben Roethlisberger in that degree. And I would argue that he's stronger than Ben Roethlisberger. He just doesn't have Ben Roethlisberger's wheels, even old Ben Roethlisberger's rickety wheels. He doesn't even have those, you know, he's a shopping cart with the wheel that like, you know, wiggles when you're moving down the aisle. I mean, that's Philip Rivers' wheels right there. And if you force him to move a little too fast, he might veer off into the aisle, but he's someone that, certainly, I think it's been a mix of two things. And some of that, because Jay Moyer brought it up in the Caraccio piece that I was talking about that I'll post also up on this site for the RSP cast, which is, you know, there's a play that he made against Cover 3 where Stephon Gilmore was playing that outside shade Cover 3, prevent the deep ball type of coverage to Keenan Allen. And it was a backside go route that Rivers threw to Allen for a score. And Allen won that route easily, but it wasn't even really part of the progression look, the primary progression looks for that particular play. But Rivers knew probably a combination of talking to Allen during the game and Allen going, listen, later in the game, I'm setting up Gilmore. He's going to think I'm going to run a post and I'm going to make a little move and continue on the out. And he's going to jump it because he's just too aggressive. I've seen it on film. It's happening in this game. At the key moment when they play Cover 3, just give me a look. And if I'm ahead at this particular point, just turn and throw it, man, because I'm going to beat him by a mile. And that kind of thing happens in a lot of games with top players and coaches. And Rivers did that with Allen. But when he didn't have a guy like Allen, trying to do that with Seiji Ejiratutu, you know, who may have just gotten onto the field and just trying to remember the snap counts of different things and where he's supposed to line up, that kind of stuff's higher level. You can't go playground. You can't go in-game adjustments and talking that kind of nuance of football when you're just trying to remember the basic answers to the test so you don't screw up and incur penalties. So I think that you're right that some of it was Rivers being too aggressive. Sometimes that happens. He gets pushed into those situations, but it's usually because he's had to make that aggressive move at the end to even just stay in the game at that point when he's had several plays where maybe his receivers didn't really get the memo and should have gotten the memo in the way that he looked at it. So
Well, what is interesting is his aggressive throws. So that's throws where he's throwing with a defender within a yard, which, you know, and so this is next gen, which I think is just, it's going to happen in the NFL. It's dropped from 19 to 17 to 16 over the last 3 years. So I think part of that speaks to A, him being on the same page, like you're talking about with players, right? Because, you know, he's been with Keenan Allen a while, but, you know, Mike Williams is still learning, you know, with Rivers, and he and Keenan Allen, I'm sure, continue to every year just get to where they know each other even better and better. You know, but if you think about the players that are on the roster, you know, he's just now probably reaching that standpoint of gelling, and he's got better talent, which can probably lead to more separation.
Yeah, because, you know, and also on top of that, Hunter Henry's been out. Keenan Allen isn't a huge separator. His biggest separator is Travis Benjamin, who's been off and on too, and not always the schematically always been the sharpest tool on the depth chart in terms of being consistent and not making some mistakes. He's a good player and has some compelling traits, but he's been inconsistent. And then when you have to fill in with Antonio Gates as your tight end and kind of, you know, walk him out there on the you give him a walker out there and he's like basically, you know, beating people on short targets with the walker and playing the old man game. That's going to bring it down as well. But I'm with you.
Well, I have to take one time out. Okay. Keenan Allen's not a good separator, Matt. Man, like when I watch him, it's like
oh, yeah.
DBs are on skates.
I misspoke.
Okay. What am I missing?
Yeah,
Teach me.
he's a great separator. He doesn't have great speed. He has unbelievable deer-like quickness and routes. But I'm sorry. He's not a traditional.
He's not Travis Benjamin. Yeah.
Yeah, he's not Travis Benjamin or Ted Ginn. I'm sorry. That's what I meant. My bad. Thank you for correcting me, because I know I would get emails like, what are you talking about? And you're
just a hater. Right. Everybody that knows you just hate Keenan Allen.
Exactly. I didn't have God. Probably in every league I have him. But, you know, the thing about Rivers, I'm with you. I have about 919 attempts for the offense, 561 for Rivers. I have him at a higher rate than you. I mean, I'm going upside with him, and I'm aggressive. I have him at 69% completion rate. I think this is going to be the year where it starts to click more because of Hunter Henry being back, Mike Williams having another year. Some of these backs that I think are going to be compelling, even if it's not Gordon in there. And I have him at 8.19 yards per attempt. So I have him at about close to 4,600 total yards. I have the same rate of touchdowns to attempts at 5.5. So I have him at 31 touchdowns. I have him at 0.21 or 2.1 interceptions per attempt. So I end up with the same amount as you, 12 interceptions. And just for the heck of it, I gave him 5 rushing yards.
That's in the upside of his projection spectrum, Matt.
Yes,
just so you know, that's absolutely the ceiling.
I told you I was going upside. I went down to the rushing yard even to
you
give
did,
him 5.
You did.
Yeah, I almost gave him a touchdown, and I thought I was being too crazy there. So, yeah.
Well, let's talk about these guys. How do you have that divvying up across some of these receivers we talked about?
Sure. You know, so I don't have the percentage on mine. You know, on mine in terms of target percentage to what's going on, but I have Keenan Allen at 137 targets, 97 receptions, about close to 1,200 yards. I would imagine this is probably close, if not exactly, you know, very similar to what he did last year. 6 touchdowns, some rushing yards. They seem to like to run the ball with these receivers. So I even gave him like 9 attempts for 75 rushing yards in this, but 97 for 1,196 and 6 touchdowns for Allen. Mike Williams, I have him at 98 targets, 64 receptions, 986 yards and 7 touchdowns. So I actually have him leading this team in touchdown receptions, which I'm a little iffy on because of Hunter Henry being back. And then with Travis Benjamin, I have him at 35 targets, 17 receptions, 264 yards at about 15.5 per catch and 3 touchdowns. And I actually have him scoring a rushing touchdown, getting him, you know, he and Mike Williams be each getting 7 attempts. One Williams getting about 32 yards, Benjamin getting about 41. Dylan Cantrell, I'm really between he and Jeremy Davis, they're interesting guys that I think should be monitored throughout camp, but neither of them I'm going to give you any major projections for unless Benjamin or Williams or Allen get hurt, one of those guys will probably come to the fore, and it would probably be Dylan Cantrell, if you ask me, who has the most upside.
Texas Tech guy.
Yep, yeah. Texas Tech guy. Extremely quick, really big, really good around the rim, you know, and being able to make that first man miss, but he's slow. So it will be interesting to see. He's kind of a real boom bust candidate, depending on what goes on there. And then for tight ends, Hunter Henry, I have at 73 targets, 47 catches for 543 yards and 5 touchdowns. I think it's probably the lowest you'll probably see a lot of people have of Hunter Henry. I'm just guessing. But that's kind
what
of
do, what keeps like. Hunter Henry so low for you, like when you're thinking about this offense?
I guess for me, part of it is I, everyone got so excited about him as a rookie, and I thought he benefited mm-hmm. so much from Antonio Gates. The rookies were, I mean, like, he was backside, you know, they put him in 2 and 3 tight end sets. They snuck him out of the backfield. He had like so many easy scores where the defense was like, let's worry about Keenan Allen. Let's worry about Antonio Gates. Let's even worry about Melvin Gordon some. And I have Melvin Gordon at like 67 catches for 653 yards and 5 touchdowns as well. So part of it is that I was looking at, you know, the backs and the receivers and what they've done in the past. And I just felt like that, yeah, maybe Hunter Henry takes over what the old Gates role is, but that the old Gates role came before Anthony Lynn came into the fray. And I just wonder if, you know, I looked at Henry and I know people love what they see of him, but I never thought he would, I honestly thought he was kind of a slightly more athletic Austin Hooper. And a guy who was getting way more hype because he scored touchdowns than he actually deserves as a player. Now, he may prove me wrong, but I think he's a tough route runner who gets open in the middle of the field, but he's not the athlete that Travis Kelce is. And I just don't know if the Chargers are really a team that's going to use a tight end the way the Eagles use a tight end. So I'm interested to see what you think of that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've got them similar, so we'll come back on Hunter Henry here. I was just looking at Keenan Allen. You said 139 targets in the U had 97, right at 1,200 yards and 6 touchdowns. We're almost exactly the same. Okay. I just have him a few catches lower. I've got him at right at 1,200 yards. I've got him at, hang on, let me, I'm trying to look at a couple different things here because I was pulling something up for folks I wanted to share. I've got him at 6 touchdowns, you know, just like you do. So okay. There is some noise though around, you know, Keenan Allen, you know, kind of that's just out there right now. And so what folks, one thing I would invite folks to look at, because I think there are a lot of folks that if you think about fantasy circles, I'm seeing a lot of stuff on Twitter around Keenan Allen's, you know, just not worth a pick in the third round, or Keenan Allen is just, this is his year to go down. And what I'm hearing cited, this probably needs to be an unskew your view piece in the very near future. But what I'm hearing cited is, oh, we'll look at his drop off over the last part of last year. And if you really go look into it and you dig in, he did drop off over the second half of last year. But if you look at the, if you go to the Chargers on something like Pro Football Reference, and then you go look at, you know, the injuries from the week against Kansas City, that's what I was looking for, December 13th, he injured his hip. And even though he wasn't showing up on the injury report at the end of every week, because you know how it works now on Friday, if you know, there's no more probable, it's just, if you're not questionable or out, you're off. But you could have a guy like Allen who's literally missing days of practice and very limited. There's different versions of limited,
yes.
Right? And so he's a guy that was very limited down the whole stretch of the last four games, and that hip was just never right. So if you go back to last year, and if you take those last four games and you take them out, because a lot of people, what they're looking at is, oh, over the last 8, he was on pace for like 1,000 yards and this and that and the other. If you go take out those games where he was injured, he was still on pace for almost 1,350 yards. He was on pace for 111 catches and 7 touchdowns on 151 targets.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to put that out there because I am hearing that narrative, and the narrative's just wrong. He was hurt. Yeah. So when you're a player who everything you do is based off of quickness and, like you said, guile and other things, where it's not just truly you're faster than everyone else, and if you think about the type of routes he runs and what kind of stress he puts on his hips due to the way he sinks them in and out of cuts. It's a big factor for a receiver that depends on those sort of things like he does.
Yeah, great point.
So just wanted to get that out there. So as far as the rest of the team, where I've got them, actually, I don't have to say it, but I gave Dylan Cantrell something. I'm proud that I just finally had some sleeper that you were giving something to. I did the same thing, so I got to pat myself on the back.
What'd you have? But just for the curious. Yeah, I want to see. What'd you give him?
Well, I just had him at 3%, but he got on the board. All right. So I got him at 16 targets for 10 catches, 100 yards, and one touchdown.
That's pretty close. He's the kind of 9, 7, 84, and 1.
Yeah, I think there's room for him just because Tyrell Williams, you know, is gone. Travis Benjamin, you know, he's usually got a pulled hamstring or something that knocks 3 or 4 games off. So there's probably room for him. So the way I have the offense shaking out is Keenan Allen working the intermediate, Mike Williams working deep again. I've got him at 87 targets, 52 catches, 780 yards, and 7 touchdowns. So we're pretty close on him as well. You had him in the 90 target range. I've got him at 87. Travis Benjamin, similar to you, I've got him really working deep. I've got him at 16 yards per catch. Got him at 21 catches for 334 yards, 3 touchdowns. And if I really think about the pecking order of the offense, I have number one is Keenan Allen. I've got him at 26% of the targets. And then I've got Hunter Henry and Mike Williams tied, both at 16%. So that's 87 targets. I'm slightly higher than you on Hunter Henry. I've got him at 87 targets. You said 73. I've got him at 61 catches at 12 yards per catch. So that's 730 yards. And then I've got him at 6 touchdowns. I think he and Mike Williams have the most upside as far as touchdowns this year, because we do know that kind of like what you're talking about, Phil Alexander at Football Guys. Yeah, he's not Antonio Gates, but we do know he's willing to look at the tight end, you know, down in the red zone. So I think, and he's the major reason that I don't have Mike Williams at like 8 or 9 touchdowns, is I just feel like he's good enough that they're probably going to, you know, split some of that work once you get down into the red zone inside of the 10 and specifically inside of the 5. I see him becoming a much bigger threat. As far as the running backs go, I've got 20% going to Melvin Gordon and Austin Eckler together, 12 of it to Gordon, 8 to Eckler. I have not adjusted Melvin Gordon to this point. I'm assuming something is going to happen. If something doesn't happen, though, I think what you're going to see is you're going to see Austin Eckler probably pick up a good chunk of those targets. So Eckler's at 8 now. That I would probably bump him up to the 12-14 range. And then I would probably give the remaining 6% to Justin Jackson, where I think Justin Jackson gets a really big bump if for some reason Melvin Gordon doesn't play, is on the attempts. I think if Melvin Gordon's out, I think Justin Jackson will lead the team in carries.
Agreed.
I think Austin Eckler would be behind him in carries, but would see a bump in the passing work.
Yeah, I think that's sensible, and I think that's exactly what will happen. In that, I would agree completely, because like I have a Melvin Gordon right now, I haven't changed him. I'm at 233 attempts, 1180 yards, about 5 yards a carry, 11 touchdowns. I'm at 88 targets, 67 catches, 653 yards, and 5 touchdowns. So I have him at 16 total touchdowns. You know, he's one of the top 3 to 5 backs and you know, projected for this year in terms of statistics. And then with Eckler, I have it about 68 attempts, 327 yards at about 4.8 and 3 touchdowns with about 45 targets, 35 catches, 340 yards and 2 touchdowns. And then Justin Jackson, I have projected right now at 57 attempts, 288 yards, 5.0, about the same yards per carry as Melvin Gordon with 2 touchdowns, 30 targets, 22 catches, 220 yards, and 1 touchdown. And I think that, yes, if Gordon isn't going to play, I would probably give I'd give Jackson maybe somewhere between 5 to 7% more touches on the ground than Austin Eckler, and give Eckler 5 to 7% more touches through the air.
Okay. Yeah. So we're very similar then on that situation, if folks are trying to navigate that right now. So for Melvin Gordon right now, I've got him at 245 attempts, 1100 yards. I've got him at 11 rushing touchdowns. I've got him at 49 receptions, 439 receiving yards and 3 touchdowns. And Eckler is at 43 targets, 30 catches, 325 yards and 3 touchdowns. And then Eckler for rushing, I've got him at 125 for right around 580 and 4 rushing touchdowns. So it's a very, this is an offense that outside of Keenan Allen, and Keenan Allen, I think is I continue to give him, I don't know that he'll ever see 28-29% again, but I think he's still right on the cusp of 26-27 because of how locked in he and Rivers are. And he's just always open. Quarterbacks can't, it's hard not to throw to somebody that's literally almost open every play. Right. And so that's where I think, to your point earlier, you know, if I were just studying this as data, and I have a lot of friends that study the analytics side of it on Twitter, and I've even heard a lot of them saying, no, man, Keenan Allen's going to be 23-22% because you got all these other mouths. And while part of that is true, when you go watch the games and you watch the separation Mike Williams gains, and then you watch on the same play how he literally could have just thrown it to Keenan Allen again, and it would have probably been the better throw, you almost have to force working these other guys in because he's so good.
Yeah.
Now you have to balance it out, and that's how you balance defenses. You have to make them respect the other options, but I just don't see a way, unless Keenan Allen gets hurt, that he doesn't get 25-26% of the targets despite these other guys being good, because they're good, not great. Keenan Allen's great.
Yeah. I mean, this is basically Philip Rivers as Christopher Walken going, we need more cowbell, you know? And I think that's what's happening, is that like in the huddle, they call the play and he's like, whatever, we need more cowbell, because he just sees it over and over again. And Keenan Allen's that cowbell.
It's kind of like backyard, you know, you're playing backyard football when you're young, you know, and I even do it with my kids sometimes, you know, we're out in the front yard playing and one of them's just never open. I can't help it. The other kid's open all the time. And then I got to force it in, you know, to the other kid just to make them feel like daddy still loves them.
Yeah.
But you know, my middle son Landry just freaking burns every coverage. I don't know what to do about that.
Right. So. See, there you go. And that's exactly it. And I think that the best football players at the highest level have an element of understanding how to transcend the scheme, so it does feel like playground, that they can incorporate those elements into it. That's why Philip Rivers did what he did against the Patriots. It's why Brett Favre invented the RPO, essentially. It's, you know, you're able to transcend the things to an extent that you're like, you know, I bet I can get away with that. I bet I can get away with this. You know, this makes more sense than doing whatever's on the page here. I mean, I'm just watching it happen over and over and over again. I'd be stupid if I didn't try it. So, I mean, I think that's the same thing. And Philip Rivers is a coach on the field. And he's someone that certainly makes, you know, he makes forced iron meals out of at a bad diner in a, you know,
and I mean, and schematically, Keenan Allen also is the guy. They know, even the coaches know it. They move him all over. He's either playing flanker or slot every play. So what they do with him perfectly fits what he does. And then on top of that, he gets a lot of really good mismatches, and he's tough to jam, A, just because he's tough to jam. And number two, the scheme doesn't allow you to get many jams on him, because they keep him moving, or they keep him in the slot, or they line him up in snugs off the line. They just do a lot of things with him. I mean, and he just has a great feel for the, not only is he good at separating, he has a great feel for the field.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It makes total sense to me. And it's, you know, it's like a basketball team with a high end scorer. You just keep feeding the guy with a good point guard in addition to that. So, listen, you know, this was awesome. And certainly I talked about at the beginning of the episode that we'd be covering the Chargers and the Raiders, and we will be doing that. But I'm going to split this episode into two halves. So for those of you who've had the time to be able to, you know, listen to this one, you know, only right now, you know, thank you again for, you know, checking out this RSP cast. And you can check out other episodes where Dwayne and I have been going through several teams' projections for their offenses, and they've been highly entertaining and informative. You can find Dwayne at Dwayne McFarlane on Twitter, as well as at footballguys.com with his projection spectrum article, as well as what you got with Unskew Your View at the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, as well as RSP Film and Data and a variety of other projects that he's doing. And you can check out the RSP cast, you know, at your favorite format, whether it's iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, Stitcher, Spotify, you name it. And thanks again for listening, folks.